I think getting those 11 nations together is quite significant. You know, we've seen the WTO as dead as Doha in recent years. So it's sort of that is a significant thing. In another sense, having an agreement that includes Asian countries, includes Canada, includes Latin America, Australia and New Zealand, that's also good in terms of the diversity across the Pacific. And in some areas like agriculture, we've been waiting for a reduction in trade barriers for a long time in those sectors, so that's quite good news.
What industries should get the most out of the TPP?
I think from an Australian point of view, you know, things like beef and rice will do well, dairy and so on. I think it'd be good for, you know, manufacturing sectors from Japan. I think for Australia, professional services, architects into Singapore and so on will be good. So I think across agriculture, we'll probably go from the, you know, mining boom to the dining boom with agriculture, do quite well in professional services, and it'll probably, you know, have some overall macroeconomic benefit globally.
Yeah, I was going to say agriculture is a really important benefit of the TPP, and you were alluding there to professional services. Is that an opportunity for Australia to, say, export its education or its tourism services without tariffs or without greater penalties?
Yeah, I think so. Things like architecture, you know, that's traditionally been quite difficult because, obviously, governments favour their locals. So I think it allows architects to tender for government work and government procurement and pick up, you know they're building the Great Mall of, you know, China, but also other parts of Asia are building rapidly, so it'll be allow Australian companies to get involved in infrastructure. So that's a benefit. So I think, I mean, in terms of size and scale, I would say the government's right in terms of it having some, you know, significant scale and significant size.
So although the TPP is to be signed in March, when can we really start to see the real effects of the TPP coming through to Australian consumers?
I don't think they're things that hit your hip pocket tomorrow. I think they're more jobs and better consumer prices and more opportunities over 5 to 10 years. You know, Australia opened up its economy significantly in the 80s with the Hawke-Keating reforms, and we've had 27 years of economic expansion. So it's taken a long time and a gradual time for those benefits to come through. So I think of trade deals as a marathon, not a sprint.
Well, the drama of the TPP, well before March, well before this re-signing, has always been US President Donald Trump's hostility towards multilateral trade agreements. Firstly, Tim, he said in the past that the TPP is ridiculous, amongst other memorable quotes, but he's turned around at the World Economic Forum in Davos, hinting that a better deal may woo him and the US back. What do you think that better deal would look like?
Well, Trump's always said he's not against free trade. Trump's always said America's made lousy deals. And he presented himself as candidate Trump as the art of the deal, the guy who can do the best deal for America. So I think with him, I think he's just saying with TPP or NAFTA or any of the agreements that the US has done with Japan or China, that he can improve the terms of the US. Now, unfortunately, the way Trump talks, and a lot of people do this, is they talk about a trade win as only the US exporting and only the US benefiting, whilst in actual fact, a good trade deal means that you increase exports and imports simultaneously. It's not, you know, it's not a win to have a trade surplus with every country in the world. It could actually be detrimental to you as well as detrimental to your trade partner.
Well, he's even said that he prefers bilateral agreements over multilateral trade agreements. And you were just mentioning NAFTA there, which I think is really interesting, because his administration is renegotiating NAFTA, and now he's hinted support of the TPP when he, during the 2016 election campaign, went on a huge protectionist campaign. So which version of Donald Trump should Canberra believe?
Well, I think with Donald Trump, always with trade policy, is he'll make some outrageous statements, he'll put a few things on Twitter, he'll have a few wins, like a couple of car plants agreeing to stay in Michigan or set one up in Alabama rather than set one up in Mexico. So all he needs is a few high-profile wins in the states that he won off the Democrats, like a Michigan, and then he can declare victory. And if the United States job market continues to improve on the back of Janet Yellen's fine work at the Fed, then he can really declare victory and not change trade policy too much at all. And one thing about the United States is that trade policy is made by Congress. They give the president fast-track negotiating, but for the most part, trade is also done in the Congress. So really, I think Trump will use his bully pulpit, his Twitter account, to beat up on a few American companies who he can claim are not doing the right thing. But I don't think he will rip up the American the international trade architecture as much as he claims he said he would.
Well, Australia has welcomed this change. Mr. Turnbull said something about that. And I guess in some ways, well, at least to the eyes of the media and the liberal elites in Davos, it could be seen as a move back towards the liberal economic order. Do you think, Tim, it was necessary for Australia to be outspoken about this turn of events?
I think Australia's always been a leader on multilateralism and always been a leader on having an international trade presence, partly because we were penalised as an agricultural exporter by the policies of the US and the European Union so drastically. So we've always been a leader on multilateral trade liberalisation. And I think as a middle power, we should do, because we've had a good track record and we've got a good story to tell in terms of trade. I think the things that perhaps the elites in Davos may miss, and people on the right miss probably deliberately, is that trade is necessary but not sufficient. You can have an open trade regime, but if you're undercutting your own country with bad industrial relations policies or bad healthcare policies or education policies, then trade's not going to do any good for you at all. I mean, the important thing about the Hawke-Keating era is that they opened up the economy, but they brought in Medicare and superannuation and that accord to manage wages and growth expectations and to allow productivity to grow along with wage growth. So I think your domestic policy should be progressive, protecting the vulnerable, protecting parts of the labour market that can be hurt, whilst you open up your economy.
Even in the revision, China is still not at the table. And considering the story we had in the last few days, where Australia now sides with Japan strategically and by inference with the United States, that infuriated China. Now they plan to sign the TPP. Is this only going to infuriate that relationship further, do you think?
I think, I think China's got a legitimate reason to be more of a global player and to be part of global institutions. But it's also got more global responsibility. I think Australia should have been quicker to sign up to the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, and as was Australia, always very pro-China when it came to joining the WTO and so on. But if a trade deal is in our interests and it involves Japan and other allies, then there's no reason for China to be upset by it. I mean, we've had a commercial agreement with Japan since 1957. And until 10 years ago, Japan was our number one trading partner. So I would have thought strong ties between Japan and Australia is only to China's benefit.
You've just mentioned there an Australia-Japan relationship will be beneficial to China. And that might be the way, who knows, to solve that relationship.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, China, Japan and Australia having a strong relationship in the Asia-Pacifics allowed China to also join the Asia Pacific community and be a leader. And in a sense, I think it's been a good contributor to stability in the region economically.
Do you think, at least economically, then, that Australia could be a nice middleman, I guess, between China and Japan if they ever decide, let's sort out our differences? I know they've just called a summit for China, Japan, and Korea. What's your take on that?
I don't know if we'll be the diplomatic broker, but we certainly could be one of a number of powers making a positive contribution. I know that Australia and South Korea set up APEC and set up the G20 infrastructure during the global financial crisis. So I think there is a role for middle powers to make a positive contribution when things go a little bit off of the wheels for the superpowers.
Too many good things to talk about in Asia, as always. Tim Harcourt, the Airport Economist. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Hans. Always love talking to you. Thank you.